Before we begin, I want to acknowledge the traditional custodians of these lands in which we recorded this podcast, the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, whose deep connection to story, land and culture have existed for 60,000 plus years. It is an honour to conduct our business here in Naam, and I pay my respects to Wurundjeri elders, past and present, for having us. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land. Hello listeners, I'm Linz, and pronouns are he, him, and I'm a senior facilitator and digital presenter here at The Man Cave. And you've joined us for another insightful episode of the Is This Okay podcast. Now, we've been funded by the Department of Families, Fairness and Housing to help support young people to understand affirmative consent. And now we can't do that without supporting all the people around them, including you. So in the past 12 months, just to get specific, the Victorian government have adapted and changed and introduced new legislation specific to affirmative consent. And to be honest, this impacts all of us. But in particular, the young people in our lives who are often navigating the complex world of sex and consent and intimacy, they need our help to understand it. So if you want to learn more about the specific changes, we're going to pop some links in our show notes so you can. But we've created this podcast to have a bit of a nuanced discussion, also share some of our tips, insights and knowledge so that you can have some of these challenging conversations with the teenagers in your life who are really needing our help to understand it. So this podcast is for the carers, parents and educators out there. But hey, I can't do all this alone. So I'm joined by someone in-house today from the Man Cave, a fabulous human being by the name of Lucy Barrett. She is our product manager, but she's so much more. She's also a facilitator. And I'm not going to give too much more away. I'm going to let Lucy describe what she gets up to here at the Cave. Luce, welcome to the desk.
Thank you so much for having me. Oh my gosh, what an intro.
What an intro. I know it was a lot to memorize, to be honest. But hey, we're here. Who are you? Let our listeners know. And what's your role here at the Cave?
Well, you've touched on a bit of it already. So I'm the product manager here. So a core part of my role there is to make sure that anything that we facilitate or sell or do in schools or wherever it may be is aligned with curriculum, evidence-based. I just want to make it the best possible and like version of what it is. We take our roles really seriously. So let's make sure that we're informed about what we're doing.
Yep.
So that's one part of my role. I also, as you say, facilitate. I occasionally do that with the boys, but I more often work with adults and specifically on our partnership with Movember and the Speakeasy workshop. And then I also work in Transform, which is our school consulting program or offer, I should say, where we work really closely with schools to analyze and update their wellbeing programs to better suit their context. So I've got a kind of a wheelhouse of things that I do in-house, and it's the best job ever. Like, I love being at the Cave.
We're so lucky to have you, Luce, because, yeah, I think you just bring a wealth of knowledge, but also you've helped us articulate the reasons behind, but also the information that informs what we do.
Yeah, you know, you kind of touched on it before, like a big project that I've worked on is the development of our curriculum. Just to ensure that we are bringing the latest and greatest and, yeah, give all of the young people that we work with the best possible chance of succeeding. So, yeah, that's all just been informed by, like, I've never not worked in education. Like, my first job outside of school was at a school. So my whole background has been in that space. I've just been in the nooks and crannies of the place for a while. So also then taught in primary schools and secondary schools, co-ed, private, residential, outdoor ed. So I've just had a really 360 degree view of it, which I'm incredibly grateful for. And, yeah, in my master's study of wellbeing, like, really fanned the flame for my passion of this particular area. And when the opportunity came to work at the Man Cave, like, how could I pass it up? Like, we're working with young men to understand their internal worlds. We want to give them safe spaces to talk about what they're experiencing and to kind of normalize that conversation and also normalize that experience for them so they can then act from a better place.
Yeah.
you know, boys are getting a bit of a bad rap at the moment. And, you know, if we can't understand our internal worlds, that's going to either go kind of aggressively inwardly or mm-hmm. aggressively outwardly.
Absolutely.
So I was drawn to the work because of that. And another big reason that I'm drawn to it is because I'd love to see safer spaces for women mm. and all genders, actually. Yep. And so, you know, it was interesting because a number of my friends are really surprised that I work at the Man Cave. Mm. But if I want to be an advocate for women and all genders and make safer spaces for them, I believe it all starts working sometimes with the boys.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's a big reason why I'm here. Like, obviously, I identify as a man, but I also have a lived experience of being a marginalized group as a gay man. Mm. I've got a lot of women in my lives that I've seen impacted by, probably more so men that have struggled to articulate what's going on inside.
Yeah.
And, yeah, part of my mission here is to really create a safer world for all of us. And that starts with men within themselves, creating a safer world in their inner world, right?
Yeah. And to add to that, actually, just so it's not missed, it's also a safer place for themselves as well and other men. It's Absolutely. Not to say that they aren't impacted by it as well. It's, you know, a 360-degree thing.
So then with that being said, Luce, like, why have the Man Cave decided to be a part of a project like this in informing and helping young people understand affirmative consent? Why does that relate to the Man Cave's mission?
Well, I think like there's a deep relationship with the Respectful Relationships curriculum and, you know, affirmative consent is part of that and our programs are informed by that. But ultimately what for me it boils down to is this idea of emotional literacy.
Mm.
And I think we hear, you know, emotional intelligence and all of that flicked around a fair bit. But, you know, I see at the absolute center of affirmative consent is people understanding their wants and needs, understanding when they're not being met, understanding when those boundaries are being crossed. And the only way that we can understand if any of those things are happening is if we actually have the language to describe our emotional state.
Yep.
And so what we're doing at the Cave, at the absolute center of it, is to actually just help people develop the language for something that they're feeling.
Yeah.
To then consequently understand it, to then consequently be able to communicate it.
Mm.
Like it just boils back down to all of that. And I know that we're exploring affirmative consent within the context of sex and you know, that's a whole different wing which we'll speak about, but that's the baseline of it.
Because we've got to kind of start there, right? We've got to start with like what is consent within ourselves and in our everyday relationships so that we can practice it for when we get to those intimate settings that are vulnerable and probably even more vulnerable, to be able to have it be a little easier to access.
Completely. And this is a little sidestep, but I found it a really helpful metaphor that I've heard before is like, you know, when you're in a foreign country and people are speaking this really fluent language and you can't understand it, think about the frustration that you feel just buying like a train ticket.
Yep.
Like imagine if that was your internal world and you can't actually put any words to it to gain any comprehension of it.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, we develop that first. Okay, now that we understand it, how can we apply that to setting boundaries, to respecting other people's boundaries? Mm. So in fact, we can develop relationships, which we also know to understand to be like a primitive need that we all have, connection.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think this really then relates to our mission, right, of creating communities that have impactful programs within them. They have resources, they have role models. That's what we're trying to do as an organization. And without that, like affirmative consent just relates so directly to that in that way. Within that, why and how does masculinity relate to consent though?
Mm.
You know, to get even more granular or specific about the work we do within masculinity, like why is that connected to consent?
What do you think?
Good question. I think there's something to do with power within it. There's obviously men have inherent power when it comes to their place in our society. And, you know, we might not always feel like that as men. I definitely at times don't feel that way. But when we're thinking about marginalized groups and women in our lives, like there is a power imbalance. So masculinity and the way that we want to kind of challenge societal norms of masculinity, of men always needing to have that power, always needing to be in control. If we can start to demystify that and I guess change that narrative as such, then it's going to allow men to be in these vulnerable positions and be okay with having no be the answer or having a situation that maybe isn't the one that they wanted and be okay with that. Yeah, I'd love to know your thoughts.
We're paddling into some incredibly deep water because there's no way that we can actually just simply summarize it in a sentence. Like even just in the way that you've answered it just then, we can see how multifaceted it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we understand now that young men and even men in the 21st century have inherited this idea of masculinity that is outdated. Yeah. And I want to forever silence the term toxic masculinity for so many different reasons, but it suggests that it's, you know, broken beyond repair. And I don't believe that that to be the case.
Agreed.
It's just that the norms and traits that men have needed to show historically to meet what their communities have needed historically has changed. Yeah. So where I see it now, and I know that this is me doing a bit of history before I get to answering the question directly linking it to consent, is that what we actually, what society actually requires from men now is for them to be able to hold their center. And so how that relates to affirmative consent is that if there's any level of rejection, any level of dismissiveness, maybe there's a maybe the person that they're with it feels more powerful or perceived to be more powerful than them, you know, all of these things, that that's accepted, processed, and either questioned, you know, communicated and not reactionary.
Yeah.
And not seen as a slight against their character or makes them less manly.
Yeah.
So where it comes into consent is this idea that if someone says no, that's them stating their boundary, not saying no to you as a person. And unfortunately what's happened, and I would say this is broadly in society, is that we attach behaviour to a person and actually they're two distinct things. Like when we're on the court, when we're working with boys, we actually, you know, we speak to that. It's like one, it's one of the mindsets that we adopt, you know, that if we're getting resistance or we're getting these behavior things, it's a need not being met. It's not the person. So I know that's a bit of a roundabout way to come back to it. But I think if we're currently operating still on an old framing of masculinity, hypersexualized, got to have power, you know, there's a bit of ego there, physically attractive, you know, all of these kind of things, that feeds into the narrative that, you know, I should be having sex and if I'm not, therefore I'm failing.
It does. And I think especially for teenage boys, that
100%
hypersexualized sort of message that they get sent and even like I've got to have a girl or I've got to have sex, which I felt as a teenage boy. And I was a gay teenage boy, but I was also really struggling to find my masculinity because I knew it wasn't the same as the other boys, but then I felt like I had to be that. So yeah, there was a real pressure for me to have sex. And what that pressure does is then it puts that on the boy who then puts that on the people they're in an intimate situation with and consent kind of is a thing that falls away. And I think you just articulated it way better than what I did.
I think you're absolutely right because the essence of what you were saying is that value of a human was placed on this metric. It was placed on this idea of if I do this, I then it means I am then that. And like I think the additional part to this, if we're putting it within the context of adolescence, right? The number one thing we're trying to do, all of us, and I will argue you and I did it as a teenager, is figure out who we are, what we're about, and at all costs fit in.
Fit in. Absolutely.
So
we need it.
If that's the thing that, you know, like at all costs, even though we understand that it might not be the best thing to do or the right thing to do, being separated from our tribe when we're in adolescence is like, that's life threatening.
It is life threatening.
You know, it's like your friends and your tribe are your life raft. So, you know, if you don't have one and then, you know, it's seen that going and having sex or getting a body count or whatever means you're going to find yourself on one, then, you know, all the other things get, you have that tunnel vision.
Couldn't agree. And so then I'll ask you this question, but I can probably also answer it myself. But what are we kind of seeing in the classroom in when it comes to consent? When it, like, how are young boys reacting to affirmative consent?
Super nuanced question. I mean, are we, in terms of affirmative consent, in terms of sex, like, do you mean within the context of sex?
Yeah,
or just any
intimacy, consent, like
consent broadly.
You hear the word consent in a classroom. Yeah. What happens?
Yeah, I think at least in my experience of being in the classroom, it's more subconsciously seen rather than overtly seen.
Mm.
And by that, you know, a really big thing that teachers try to do, and we've been trying to do it for ages, is give students what we call agency. Yeah. So, you know, the empower them to have choice over their own actions. And so that's a way that consent is being informed by the educator to the student.
Yep.
Because, you know, we've all been in those classrooms where it's like, do it now, or don't do that, or you can't do that, or whatever it may be. And like, look, we're trying to wrangle 25 people into a classroom on different learning needs, and it seems like an almost impossible job, and at times it actually is. Yeah. So sometimes there are some places where there's a bit of rigidity. Mm-hmm. But I think giving choice to young people is really important, and being really intentional about where you place choices.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds really silly, but like rather than, okay, do you want to do your worksheet? Well, there's actually no choice in whether you have to get it done.
Yep.
But you've got to do a worksheet, pick one of these three.
Yep.
You know, there's just these nuanced ways that you can start to put into it. Mm. I think in the sense of how do I see students interact with one another around consent,
yep.
I think the conversation is starting to change because, as I said, and I keep on coming back to literacy, but the vocab's starting to be brought in.
Mm.
And so I think there's a lot more awareness around it.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot more, emotional literacy in kids because our social emotional learning programs are getting better and, you know, various other things.
Yeah, and as we evolve as adults too, like as we start to level up our ability to communicate what's going on internally and have the language for it.
Yeah. I mean, do not get me wrong, there's still a long way to go.
There is a long way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is. No, and something I guess I've seen is there's still like lots of jokes about boys and consent. Like, oh, I got to have consent to touch you and all those sorts of playful, bantery things. But we've also done some like market research with young boys.
Mm.
We've had some one-on-one chats with them.
Mm.
And they're saying they want to learn more about it.
Totally.
They want to understand consent. They want to know the situations, the environments, the phrases that they could ask. But the school environment is risky. It's uncomfortable. Mm. It's edgy. They don't want to be shamed and embarrassed in front of their mates, which often happens. Like one-on-one, great, you can have a conversation about these things. In a group, it becomes a joke. And then like the group culture just keeps that joke rolling.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess what are some of the other challenges then for us, for a teacher, that we're kind of seeing when it comes to educating young people about affirmative consent?
Yeah, it's a great question. I completely agree with you in the sense that young people want to know.
Yeah.
And like that's on pretty much anything. You know, there's a curiosity there.
Yeah.
There really is a desire to learn and to understand the world that surrounds them, and specifically around, you know, sex and their sexuality and how they can explore pleasure and everything like that. Yeah. Like there's a desire to understand it there. And also young people are not stupid. Like I know that sounds silly, but they can handle some of these truths, right?
They can.
And they'll find out the information if we don't give it to them.
Yeah.
So it's something I feel very passionately about, is that I would far prefer for us to provide avenues for young people to be able to talk to adults, people who have got some life experience that are informed, versus finding, you know, porn or what, you know, their other mates who are learning it from various like, you know, avenues as well. Challenges in the classroom is creating safety to talk about it.
Yep.
Yeah. Because for the exact reason that you just named, it is so taboo and so not talked about that therefore human needs to be brought in to create safety.
Mm. You actually have a story about this, don't you? Like from your experience as a youngster learning about sex ed. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think I had quite possibly the best sex ed lesson I think could ever exist when I was in like year 9 or 10 or something. And it was so unexpected. All 300 girls sitting in an auditorium and one whiteboard out the front, and we were like, what is going on? And this
boring.
We were just like, oh God, here we go. Because up until that point, all of the sex ed lessons has just been like, okay, so I hate using this example, but you know, here's a banana and here's a condom, or like here's a diagram of a vulva, like go and, you know, or like female anatomy, like go and label it kind of thing.
Yeah.
Here's a tampon in some water. Like, that's what it was. And so we were all kind of expecting that. Anyway, a seemingly little old lady walked up and started being like, hello, everyone. Like, my name's Nancy. And I was like, she is going to be eaten alive by all of us. It was, and we got completely fooled. She lulled us into this sense, like, we were like kind of heckling her. God, we were horrible. Heckling. And then she like whipped off the cloak, became like the most vibrant, sassy person ever, and just wrote the word vagina on the whiteboard and went, I want you to yell out every single word that you know to mean vagina. Wow. And like, I never knew that many words existed. And yeah, like, it was free reign. Like, every word you can think of, even the most explicit that you would never hear in a school, was yelled out. And she was like, no, there was no discussion or anything. Mm. Wiped off, penis, go. You know?
How playful and fun. Like, it just was remembering
unbelievable
that.
Because it was just one of those moments where we got to have the humor.
Yeah.
But we also got to have the fun with it. Mm. And like, don't get me wrong, it took a couple of goes. But once we got on a roll, it was off. And then other words, obviously hugely important.
Yeah.
Orgasm, ejaculation, like, you know, all of these terms get put up there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, some people wanted to, you know, take the mickey a little bit and kind of yelled out these ridiculous terms. And she called our bluff and said, cool, what is that?
Yeah. Great.
That clearly these young people
want to know more
wanted
about.
To know or had seen it somewhere. Yeah. And it was the most brilliant, the most brilliant. And I still stand by this. I think one of the best activities, whatever you want to call it, is like, and it's such a common thing in classrooms, is just the anonymous question box.
Yeah.
Because you will get people taking the mickey, as I say.
Yeah.
But you will also have people who say things and put things in there that they genuinely want to know about. Mm. So, of course, using, you know, all of your training and you knowing your students the best, you've got to create the safety for us to then talk about it. But then, like, take them on. Like, take the questions that are in the box on. Like, I did this with my year sixes. And I think that's also a real challenge for educators, right, is that often formal sex ed classes or, like, what, I shouldn't say formal, timetabled sex ed classes falls just on, like, whatever teacher's available for it. So sometimes if you're lucky, it falls within science and biology or whatever it may be. But, yeah, occasionally it falls with, you know, just the home group teacher. Or,
and we know teachers are super under-resourced, right? So it's a big expectation for them to navigate that.
100%. And, like, I think, you know, there's obviously something to be said for the teacher that's most familiar to the student to run this session and, you know, everything like that. But there, it's also assuming that there's comfort talking about it. And so I think that's probably my other, what I witnessed in the classroom that worked so well, was just those teachers who, those educators who were able to hold center, recognize that there could be awkwardness in the room, both from your, like, themselves and also the students, and setting up an environment was like, I will answer every single one of these to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
And when that happened in that year nine session that I had, you could hear a pin drop in a room of 300 people. We were glued to it. Yeah. It was this piece of, this is a reliable resource to me. I have heard all of these words. I had no idea what all of them were. And now I feel a little bit more informed about it.
Mm.
I know that's not really around affirmative consent, but again, if we don't know what we're actually talking about, like, how can we then actually go to the next level, which is what affirmative consent is?
Yeah.
There has to be a foundational knowledge that's established first.
Absolutely. And it's that, you know, it's an awkward and uncomfortable conversation. How do we make it less awkward? And what I kind of hear in that is, like, start with humor. What a great icebreaker that Nancy had on that day. And then it just gets everyone a bit more comfortable with the awkwardness. And then the other part of that is, like, lean into the awkwardness.
Totally.
Be awkward yourself.
Yeah.
Like, let a young person know that this is awkward and that's normal.
Totally.
You know, and it's okay, and keep going from there.
And we say this to the boys all the time, and this is slightly a sidestep again, is that, you know, we've got to get the reps in.
Yep.
And every time that we do the reps, it's going to just feel a little less and less and less. So, like, just go for it.
Go for it.
Just go for
it. It's kind of a bit like this podcast right now.
Yeah,
hey?
Exactly.
We're just getting a rep in.
Yeah.
But within that, there's something I want to speak to too, was, like, in your story is this element of bringing fun to it.
Mm.
And it's kind of the reason that we are a part of this Is This Okay project. And prior to this podcast, we ran a month of online streams specifically for teenagers. And part of the process of that was asking young people how they wanted to engage.
Mm.
One of them was anonymously, which you also just spoke to in your questions there. And the other part was like, how do we bring a bit more play and fun to a conversation around affirmative consent? So we created a bit of a game show situation. But within that, I'd love for you to talk about the curriculum that informed that, specifically around how you brought respectful relationships into it.
Yeah. So my, you know, the Is This Okay series was informed by both our curriculum and respectful relationships.
Yep.
And yeah, our curriculum is really based on the understanding of, okay, there is no masculinity curriculum out there and we by no means have written it. But what do we believe are fundamental human skills that we need to have in order to, you know, be able to take responsibility? And because it is for boys, like envisage what we call 21st century masculinity, have emotional intelligence, you know, and be able to be a safer person within our communities.
Yeah.
So where respectful relationships falls into it is that, you know, the modules in there are emotional literacy, like positive coping skills. You know, it's around strengths-based. It's around help-seeking behaviours.
Mm.
These are all just synonyms of one another.
Yeah.
You know?
But as we spoke to, it really grounds a knowledge of what comes before getting to that intimate situation, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The Man Cave is Australia's leading preventative mental health charity, empowering teenage boys in their communities to champion healthy masculinity. We do this through immersive in-school workshops and through The Cave on Twitch, our free online digital aftercare program streaming live at twitch.tv/The Cave on Twitch. Chuck us a follow to keep updated with our streaming schedule. And for more information on these programs, please visit themancave.life. And now, back to the podcast. There's another thing that came out of the stream that I'd love to throw to you. It's actually an anonymous question.
Okay.
So it's funny that you brought that up. And you don't have to answer this, but I'm going to throw it out there because this is what a young person is wanting to know. What are some common misconceptions about girls and sex that you think need to be corrected?
Oh, we're coming in with some fire here.
And it's interesting as you think about the answer is that this is what young people are wanting to know. They want to know some specifics. They're wanting to dispel some of maybe the things that they're hearing on TikTok that might not be right or whatnot. They actually are curious and want to know. So do you feel like you can answer a question like that today?
Thank you for asking.
Yep.
Look at you, consent and all. you know, I feel as though that I can't speak on behalf of, you know, girls at the moment. In the sense of young women, I think the landscape that they're navigating is so different to when I was there. You know, social media only came in when I was in year 12. So the world and the interactions and the capacity to relate to others is really, really different. In terms of the misconceptions, so was it misconceptions? I can't remember the question.
What are some common misconceptions about girls and sex?
That they're more intrigued than what you think. You know, I think something, so maybe it's not a misconception, but just maybe a mindset that I just want to bring in, is that like female pleasure has never been prioritized.
No, it never has.
It's not depicted in social media or pop culture.
Or porn.
Or porn. It is obviously starting to shift now. I think in terms of sex positivity is really like the narrative in that space has really, really changed. But I mean, this is a little bit graphic, but I think for the purposes of this, like we can see it, is that if you were to say to the average person, when does, and I'm talking about cisgendered male, female, heterosexual intercourse, when does sex end? When does sex end?
Yeah, and it's often based upon like when a man ejaculates, right?
Yeah. That is typically when sex ends. And that in and of itself as a narrative is something that I think is a hilarious, actually, let me take the judgment out of that, is a misconception of what sexual practices could or perhaps even should be. So it's around that female pleasure aspect. Is that, and you know, it's a really challenging and it's a really complex space because I think sometimes, you know, there's this fear of men of not being too dominant because of, for all the reasons that we've just spoken about, we don't want to be oppressed, that, you know, overpowerful. We want to make sure we hear a woman's voice and things like that. There's still space for there to be leadership and direction and things like that and for women to enjoy that.
Yep.
But it's all about the conversation around it. I think another misconception is that we're just like highly promiscuous.
It's like one or the other, right?
Yeah.
Frigid, doesn't have sex, doesn't like it, or a slut, which is often where women get categorized.
Completely. And so, I mean, let's not go down the whole, you know, rabbit hole that is all the mixed messages that young women, that all women actually receive.
Yep.
But within the context of this conversation, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're frigid or you're a slut.
Yeah. Yeah. And both those things are seen as negative as well.
Like, where's the middle ground?
Yeah.
How do you, like, it's almost impossible. So the capacity to explore our
sexuality.
Yeah, sexuality, our desires.
Yeah.
Is so not at all celebrated in the same way as what men's are.
Yeah.
You know, we often, and I so remember this. This was when I was younger. This was when I was maybe like 13 or 14 and I was reading Cleo in the sealed section.
Mm.
Actually, it wasn't. It was Girlfriend or Dolly magazine. For those of you out there who remember Dolly Doctor, loved it. But what was really interesting in there is I remember I saw the word masturbation and I was like, oh, why is that in here? That's just for boys.
Exactly.
I didn't realize that the verb masturbation or the act of could be applied to women.
And all genders, right?
All genders.
Yeah.
Anyone.
Yeah, I probably didn't learn that until I was in my 20s, if I'm going to be completely honest.
And you hear about wet dreams and you know, erections or stiffies when you don't want them and all of that kind of stuff. Mm. Like, it is so gendered towards that.
Yeah.
So, like, perhaps even another misconception just in this conversation is just, like, the lack of exploration that's allowed.
Yeah, and I would argue that that's also probably one for men too. Like when women don't have a voice in that situation, men also just go along with what they've kind of been shown in the media, shown in porn, is just like ejaculate, get your rocks off, off you go. But what other things, like with affirmative consent being kind of the guiding principle, can you explore with your partner? Can you explore in those intimate settings? What things don't you know you love?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think for me, yes, okay, so if we talk about affirmative consent within a sexual experience, you know, we're looking for an enthusiastic yes, and the idea is that that yes may change to a no.
Absolutely.
And it is going to require constant check-in and, you know, things like that. And I know that at the center of this conversation always is communicate. Mm. But, like, how are you going to communicate? Yeah. Is it words, noises, touch, feel, energy? After a certain amount of time, are you going to change, you know? And actually having that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, circling back way back to how this links to our work, how can you have that conversation if you don't know what you're trying to describe?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're getting to the nitty gritty. Like, let's give our listeners.
Thought we were already there.
Well, we've been through it. But let's give our listeners some tools and tips.
Yeah.
So, you know, what can they do as parents, educators, adults in a young person's life to have some of these conversations?
So acknowledging I'm not a parent, so I just want to, like, you know, just name that.
Yep.
Having said that, worked with a lot of parents, given that I've been at schools for a number of years. I think, you know, a tenet that we have at The Cave is, you know, that we want to provide healthy role models to young people. We believe that that's what's kind of missing for our men, young men. And, you know, we can't be what we can't see. So you and I were talking earlier today that, you know, it can be pretty awkward talking to your parents about sex stuff, you know, like like I'm not coming in hot with any of those details with my parents. I certainly am with my friends, whatever. But what I would suggest, like, if you're a parent and you can see that your young person has a real, you know, connection with a young adult around them, you know, it could be an older cousin or an auntie or uncle or, you know, somebody within their community.
Yep.
And you think they could be a source for your young person to go to, I'd really encourage you to empower that person to step into that role model role. I think what I've seen and what I've heard is that, you know, often this is a story, but I have to, I'll keep names out of it, is that, you know, I had a student that was super relatable, or finding their, you know, cousin that was 25 years older than them, super relatable, but they were really unsure about stepping into that because they didn't want to step on the parents' toes.
Yeah.
So like inviting those people into the conversation and really empowering them to be the role model. And so you've got a way of like, you know, then that you can facilitate that or bring that relationship alive.
Absolutely.
So then the young person knows that they can always go to that person, and you know that that's trusted and you know what's going on there. So even creating different avenues.
And there's an element of consent in that too, like asking that person, would they like to be more involved?
100%.
And vice versa. But it's also interesting because it's something I often see parents be really good at.
Yeah.
Is surrounding their children with the right people. So
completely agree.
It's like parents already have this. How can they just take it to the next level and empower those people to have maybe some of these awkward conversations that a young person might not want to have with their parent?
Yeah, completely. And I think sometimes, and this can probably go for like any adult who's working with a young person, is that if you are inherently uncomfortable with it, that's a role modeling in and of itself.
Yeah.
So my challenge there is to get into your like your discomfort.
Mm.
Either privately and figure out why you're struggling to have that conversation, or actually just like have an awkward conversation, like just start it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying
and name it. Hey, this
I'm
is
not
awkward.
Saying you need to talk about like an explicit sexual experience that you had when you were younger, because your young person probably will revolt off the back of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, saying, you know, even if you're feeling awkward about talking to your young person about them becoming sexually active,
yep.
Maybe just naming that.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, you might become sexually active in soon. I know this could be really awkward, but like I am here for you. Or if you want me to help you find someone else, like just let me know.
Yeah. Yep.
You know?
I love that.
I just think that young people have said to us that they sometimes don't feel as though that there's an avenue.
Yeah.
So let's try and create one.
And you kind of have to just create it so that they can step into it if they want to.
Mm.
And if they don't, like, we can't be attached to it.
Yeah.
We can't be attached to that outcome.
Yeah.
I also say that with my friends in life, like, I want to support them, but they may not need it.
Yeah.
So how can I just create that space so when and if they want to step in, they can.
Yeah. And a little added part to that, whether this is around affirmative consent or is in fact consent itself, is do you want me to listen or do you want solutions?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
It's great.
I just think that like, so there's choice in that.
Yeah.
It then means you're being, you know, it's permission, not trespassing.
Yep.
And it just starts that inherent sense of consent.
It does. Yeah. It's all about that role modeling too.
Mm.
You know, I really hear that in all of what we've kind of been saying today.
Yeah.
There's another thing too we were talking about a bit earlier is about the power of no. I'd love for you to speak a little more to that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of alluded to it before about in the worksheet kind of example, right? But, you know, we're really good at thinking we're giving an option when in fact we're not.
Yeah.
And a classic example is to any, you know, even a toddler, right? And we can start as young as you know,
Three or
even earlier is, you know, are you going to put your coat on?
Mm.
No.
Yeah.
There's the no.
Yeah.
Rather than, look, we're going to head outside. Do you want your coat or your jacket?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're setting ourselves up and the young people up for failure if no is the only answer.
And no doesn't have any power for them.
Exactly.
And all
yes, you're
all
so
little
right.
Ones,
you're
yeah,
so right.
All
yeah.
little ones go through that phase of like they've learned no, they see the power of no, they just go for it.
Mm.
But if we take away what no means, what does that mean when they get to an intimate setting?
Yeah.
It doesn't actually mean anything.
You've just reminded me actually of a story that somebody here, one of our senior facilitators, Ben, shared with me, and he wouldn't mind me sharing this.
Yeah.
Is he was speaking about how his younger daughter, who is around that age, you know, for a period of time when he would say, would you like to have a kiss before bed or, you know, whatever, would be, no. And he's like, I am crushed.
Yeah.
I want to hug my daughter. I want to be able to give her affection. I want to do all of those things. But she has said no.
Yeah.
And I need to respect that.
Yeah.
We had a bit of it. He's like, it is crushing.
Yeah.
And his partner actually was getting all the yeses. So he was like, I was so jealous.
Even worse.
Da, 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 like all of that. But it came back around,
yeah.
You know, and so you know, we were also saying before is that we often come up to young people and be like, oh, do you want to be picked up? And then like before we even hear the answer, they're like swooped up in the arms, you know?
Yeah.
And so these are what I call like, you know, micro consent pieces that have like subconsciously just been in, like built in. We don't even really realize that we're doing it. I mean, you know me really well.
Yeah.
I'm a hugger. I'm a toucher.
Yeah.
And like even though I work in this space and I have this education around it and I can talk about it and all of that stuff, I got called out the other week. Luce, you asked and you went straight in. And it like, so it's a constant, I'm not saying we need to scan our whole lives and be and
perfect tomorrow.
Perfect in every single way. But like there is these nuanced learnings that we can just do little corrections here and there, corrective strokes to like just put us back in and be a little bit more mindful of it all, you know?
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
If you're enjoying this sort of conversation and you would like to know more about how you can educate your young person, we're going to pop some books up in the show notes. One is a great one, Welcome to Consent from Uni Steins. Also, Consent Laid Bare by Chanel Contos. But there's another one specific to teenage boys and it's called Intimacy, A Guide for Young Men About Sex by a man named Ben Dunks. But also the Victorian government has some great resources on consent about what they're actually teaching young people in schools, which will also pop in the show notes. But moving forward, Luce, what do you see a vision for the future in like the work that we do at the Man Cave, what your sort of vision is as a human being? Like, but what about affirmative consent within all in that? How does that play into it?
This may not be the answer that you're necessarily looking for.
Hey,
I think affirmative consent is, and what I envisage for it, is that people realize that it can actually lead to a greater experience.
Yeah.
I was going to say that like affirmative consent is sexy, you know, in this sense.
Well, it will be one day.
But that's what I mean.
And it's getting there.
Yeah. Is that like, at the moment, I think a bit like, you know, when we're all getting our training wheels, it's a bit clanky and a bit jarring and it can almost, you know, a lot of people, especially like, you know, young people, is, you know, it can kind of feel a bit interrupted and like a bit and isn't it all just meant to kind of flow and things like that.
Because you've got to manage what's going on inside at the same time.
Totally. And so I think like in terms of my vision for affirmative consent, I'd love for it to just be common practice. It's not something that we're even labelling. It's just happening.
Yeah.
Because the discourse and the confidence and our capacity and capability to do it is just so much higher that it's just part of common experience.
Yeah.
That it's actually more jarring to people when it's not there.
Yeah.
That's my vision.
I love that. I love that. And what I see in that is just a world where we're better at communicating with one another. We're better at communicating our needs, our desires, our boundaries. And with that brings so much more respect for everyone, right? And I think it comes back to our mission and vision of just creating a world where men, but also all the people around them, feel safe, feel included, feel celebrated for who they are. Well, I just want to go over a couple of the key points that we've brought up in this episode before we wrap it loose. A couple of things to take away is really lean into the awkwardness of these conversations. Lean into it.
If for no other reason, to role model it.
Yeah. Yeah.
If for no other reason.
Yep. And how can you make it fun? How can you make it, how can you make it awkward fun? Funny, humorous. Maybe it takes writing penis up on the whiteboard and yelling out all the things about that. But the other couple of things that you mentioned, Luce, is around no. And like, how do we change what no actually means from a young age? You know, giving actual free choice rather than taking away what the power of no actually means. And lastly is kind of empowering the adults or others around your young person. It doesn't have to be solely on you. We live in an individualized world where the nuclear family is kind of put on this pedestal, but young people really do need diverse role models around them, supporting them. And there's nothing to be ashamed of in that. Like, how can we create a community around our young person that can feel empowered and want to step in to support them?
I've got something I'd love to add to that.
Please.
And I know that we're wrapping up, but it's just been, it prompted for me. Something else that I would suggest to parents is to support other parents.
Mm.
We understand there was a brilliant study that was done out of, oh gosh, I want to make sure that I get it right. Right. Pretty sure it's Harvard. That actually we understand that young people's bioneurochemistry is wired to no longer listen to their parents.
Yeah.
And if we go back to any form of kind of tribal-based living
and rites of passage.
And rites of passage is that actually in order for us to take our step into adolescence, we need to separate ourselves from our parents.
Yeah.
So there's like this real wiring of like, I'm not going to listen to you guys anymore because I'm my own adult. I'm going to listen to other adults.
Yeah.
And what we actually do in some of our parent keynotes is we get parents to chat to one another about this.
Mm.
Because if you think back to your teenage years and you think about your close friends,
yeah.
you're having chats with other people's parents that you're not necessarily having, at least, sorry, I'll use me.
Yep.
I spoke to my friend's parents in a slightly different way to I spoke to
I
my
can
parents.
Agree with that.
Because they just felt, for I had a great relationship with my parents, but it's that awkwardness. There's that with other parents, there's a degree of separation.
Yeah.
So if you've got other parents' kids coming to you, how can you support that young person? But how can you support that other parent?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, being all in it together.
Yeah.
I think that we often overlook that.
Yeah.
And the other brilliant part about that is that we then can start to normalize the challenges that parents are actually having.
Absolutely. Because that's what often comes out in our workshops, right? We're actually just normalizing the human experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And same as the parent experience.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's hard. It's awkward.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
How can we normalize all of that?
Yeah.
Well, that really does bring us to the end, Luce. Thank you so much for joining me on another insightful, we'll go with insightful episode of Is This Okay? The podcast. Thanks again to the Department of Families, Fairness and Housing for funding this important initiative to support young people to understand affirmative consent. Because we know that young people want and need healthy relationships in their worlds. And consent plays a big part in fostering a world where they feel safe, seen and heard. Remember though, clear consent, it's all about clarity. If everyone's not willingly on board, it's a no-go. And consent means freely choosing, which we kind of spoke about today, freely choosing without any pressure, fear or force. If someone says yes because they feel they have to, that's not real consent. Our challenge for all of our listeners is to take away and implement some of these tools. And we reckon you'll have a better chance of communicating with the teenagers in your life. Start small. You don't have to try and crack that tough wall of a young person overnight. Start with just one. And who knows, over time, what kind of impact you may have. Chuck us a follow on our socials, which we'll place in the show notes to keep up with all the latest here at the Man Cave, with what we do, some of our resources, our initiatives, and our learnings of working with teenage boys. And thanks again for listening.